This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and kind, and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will with harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depth, outward and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And as always, thank you very much, Chris. Oh, that chanting is always so very nice to do. And just before you mentioned that I talked last time about whatever it was, and then I realized it's been such a long time since I've been with the Armadale group.
Well, I believe it might be 11 months, actually.
Yes, it might well be. Yes. And two reasons for that. The first reason is I was in near Melbourne in the Newbury Monastery for about 8 months. And I also, usually on Tuesday, I teach the monks here in the monastery at this time about the rules. I teach all the younger monks and the novices about the rules for the bhikkhus, the monks' code of conduct. We have a whole sets of rules that we follow, and it's my job on Tuesday to teach them to all the younger monks so they know what they are. So that's why I'm usually not here. But this morning, one of you called the monastery. I must probably Marlene, I suppose, yeah. And we were sitting there up having breakfast up in the dining hall, and Marlene called, and Venerable Jayako picked up the phone. It's one of the younger monks. And then the question was, who's teaching Armadale tonight? And then Venerable Jayako said, oh, I will do it so I don't have to go to the Vinaya class, the monk's rules class tonight. And then I said, hey, I also don't want to go. I'll do it then. As a joke, I said it as a joke. And then, but then Venerable Jaika quickly said, okay, Venerable Sunyo is coming this evening. And then he hung up almost straight away. So I couldn't say that I was just a joke. And so then I had to come. So that's the reason. So you can either blame or thank Jaiko for it, either way, whatever.
I definitely think we're very thankful.
Okay, yeah. So am I, so because I didn't have to prepare for my classes this evening, just prepare for meditation. That's much easier. Just sit there and meditate in my kuti. And yeah, just before I came up, I just realized, oh, I'm teaching the Armadale group tonight. Then I got this really nice feeling of kindness towards all the practitioners in this group, all the meditation practitioners. And that actually made my meditation a lot better as well. Just that thought, just the sharing of the feeling that you're meditating or going to be meditating with others. If you read the Buddhist texts or you listen to various teachers, then you'll see that there is various sorts of motivations we can have for our practice. So you might ask yourself, why are you here this evening? You'll all have different reasons. Many may just be out of habit, and but others you might sometimes want to meditate to in the suttas, for example, we often find people meditating to get rid of some of the problems that they perceive in themselves, making themselves a bit of a better person, so they gradually improve themselves over their lives. That's also a very good reason to meditate. And yet another reason could be that you want to attain some or very peaceful states of mind. Maybe even you have aims for enlightenment. That's another good reason. You'll find all these reasons in the Buddhist texts. But there is another reason that you will find if you look closely in the texts. You don't even have to look that closely. That reason is for the benefit of others. That's why we practice the path. Not just for ourselves, but for all living beings. And now, tonight, I would say, especially for all of us who are joining here together. We don't meditate for ourselves, we meditate for all of us. And this is one of the reasons why meditation groups are often quite popular, I think, because you sort of share together this, I don't know, vibration or energy or whatever, or just the, without using those kind of words, just the group feeling, let's say. And you sort of carry each other through the meditation in a sense. It's of course especially true when you meditate in physical proximity when you're together, but even tonight in this group, we can still do the same thing. To practice our meditation for all of us and also for all other people that we might meet later in life or just all beings in general. And I find if I practice like that, then some burdens just get lifted from my mind because I can be a little bit of a perfectionist in life, and also that sort of carries over in my meditation sometimes. It's not as half as bad as it used to be when I was younger. When I was younger, I was the worst perfectionist you could ever find. Now as a monk, I'm pretty chill, I think. But I remember when I was a little kid, maybe 13, 14 years old, had French in high school, and French, well, pretty difficult, but I remember at one time we had this test, French, like an exam or whatever, and the highest grade you can get, I don't know what the grading system is in Australia or wherever you are, but the highest grade you can get in the Netherlands is a 10. The grading goes from 1 to 10. Yeah, so we don't have A, B, D or whatever they have in America, just 1 to 10. And this time on the test, there was a bonus question. And the bonus question, you get extra points. Usually if you have like a maybe a 6 and then you have the bonus question correct, you get a 6.5 or a 6+ or something. And I managed to score the first time ever 10+ in French because I had everything correct. And then half the bonus question also correct. Not the whole bonus question, because then I would have a 10.5. Now I had 10+. So I had the highest grade ever, apparently. But what did I focus on? Ah, why did I not have the full bonus question right? Ah, it's, I missed half a point, and that was my mindset. Super stupid. But that's sort of how my mind sometimes works. And you might, some of you know Ajahn Brahm's story of the two bad bricks in the wall. You lay 1,000 bricks and two of them are at a weird angle, and that's what you focus on. So that was very similar with me. In my French test, you have 95% correct and 5% wrong, and that's what you focus on. And now, in a French test or laying a wall, that's one thing. But I notice sometimes I used to carry that into my meditation as well. And then you're already pretty peaceful, or you're at least you're already sitting down for meditation. That's already super, super excellent, I would say. Just to do the effort, just to be there, is pretty extraordinary. Not many people in the world go there. But then you sit down and what do you focus on? Yeah, the things that are wrong. What do you want to change? Your restlessness, your tiredness. Oh, get out of here, tiredness. I want to be more alert. I want to meditate like this, not like that. Always a stupid mind. But that is never the right mindset. It never works. Trying to improve yourself through fault finding, it doesn't work. So there's various ways to get rid of the fault finding mind. Just be more kind to yourself is one way. Just to reflect that nobody is perfect is another way. But I find also a very powerful way is to not meditate for myself, but to meditate for others, for the whole world, basically. You just dedicate your meditation to others. And then it's not so much as something you need to do for yourself, but more like a gift you give. And then it feels like whatever meditation you give out, it's always good. Yeah, it may not be the best meditation, it's already a judgment, but it may not be the deepest meditation, but you know, you're sharing it with others. So that attitude just makes it much more chill. It's just, you already achieved all your goals just the moment you sit down, basically, and have that kind of mindset to practice for the benefit of all. Just that mindset, that's already, you achieved everything you wanted to achieve in that meditation session already. And this mindset is called, in some traditions they call it bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is usually more of a Mahayana concept, and we're supposed to be Theravada monks, but I don't really believe much in those kind of divisions. So I just practice bodhicitta, even though people might think I'm a Theravada monk or whatever. It's all the same. We all practice for everybody's benefit in the end. It's also said in the suttas, by developing yourself, it's like if you don't develop yourself, you're like somebody stuck in the mire, the quicksand. You're stuck in the quicksand and you're trying to pull out somebody else who's stuck in the quicksand. In the end, you just both sink down even further. So what you need to do is you develop yourself, and by developing yourself, it's like getting out of the quicksand, and then you can pull others out of the quicksand as well. So this is why our meditation will in the end be of benefit to everybody. So I would want to guide you through a little bit of a meditation to develop this bodhicitta, and then especially focusing on those of us who are here tonight, joining from all parts of the world. We're far away, but mentally we are very close together. I believe myself that the mind just doesn't really conform to physical space boundaries that much, so we can actually get our minds much in contact actually. So I'll do a guided meditation on that. And please, what time do we stop the meditation again? For time for questions, Chris?
Around after half an hour, after 30 minutes.
Okay.
Interval.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So everybody will do a half an hour meditation together. I'm going to give some instructions. Feel free to do something else. Ignore my instructions if that feels better for you. Yeah? And then just do your regular meditation. All right. Just take a deep breath. And as you breathe out, just relax your body a little bit. Find a nice posture to sit in. Find a way that you can sit in relative comfort for the coming 30 minutes. Start with some kindness to your body. And relax your body. Any tight points, anything that feels uncomfortable, now is the best time to adjust it. Can still adjust it later, but if we can do it in the beginning, all the better. You can close your eyes or open your eyes, whatever you feel more comfortable with. And as you relax further, just arrive in the place where you are now. Arrive in the moment where you are now as well. We arrive here in the meditation. The meditation, this seat we are on, this moment we are in, those will be our home for the next 30 minutes. So get in touch with those things, with where you are, with your body. What is life like right now? When we have arrived in a moment, we can set an aspiration for this meditation. May this meditation be of benefit to everybody. I will dedicate this meditation to everybody here. Through this meditation, I will help carry the burdens of others. Just like others will help carry my burden. I am not here to get something out of this meditation. Nothing for myself. This meditation is just an act of kindness and generosity to others. This is how we develop, as we've chanted before, the boundless heart. And realize that just by sitting here, just by being here, we've already completed the aim of this meditation session. We don't need anything more. So there's nothing to do now. Don't need to watch the breath. We could, but we don't need to. Don't need to do metta. Don't need to do vipassana. Whatever. All we need to do is just have the aspiration, the intention to be there for others. To meditate together. so the mind may wander. The mind may get sleepy. But today, in this meditation, we're not gonna care about that. And in doing so, we're also kind to ourselves, to our own mind. To develop a boundless heart means to treat others like yourself and yourself like others. You treat yourself like others. And we're not going around telling others how to meditate. So why should we tell our own minds how to meditate? That's not fair. Instead, we're just kind. Kind to everybody here, including ourselves. And that is all we really need to do. So I will now let you meditate like that for another 20 minutes. Let us meditate together for another 20 minutes. And if during the meditation, maybe your breath or anything, other nice object comes into your awareness, feel free to follow that if you're so inclined. We're nearing the end of this meditation, good friends. Before we come out of the meditation, let's take the opportunity to give one last boost of metta, of kindness, to all our fellow practitioners. And also to have gratitude for everybody who is practicing with us. Share your kindness as much as you can. Turn your kindness dial up to the max. Your boundless heart and say thank you, everybody. Thank you myself for this meditation. I will now invite the bell to signal the end of the meditation, and at the third ringing of the bell, it's time to come out. All right, so that was some instructions on how to develop the so-called bodhicitta, the mind of kindness and compassion. Bodhicitta literally means a Buddha's mind, or an awakened one's mind. And when the Buddha used to go on retreat to meditate, even the Buddha went on retreats to meditate. You can see it in the text. He went maybe for 2 weeks on a retreat, and he would not come out of his hut. Another monk would even go and get the food for him for the lunchtime and bring it to him. So the Buddha said he would only see that one monk and nobody else. But he also, in the text, always gives the reason why he went on those retreats. And what do you think it was? Because he needed to get something for himself? No, he always said, I go on a retreat out of compassion for others. And that is how we can also practice, like a Buddha, to share our practice, our little 30-minute retreats with others. We don't meditate for ourselves, but out of compassion for everybody else. And with that mindset, as I told you before, with the two bad bricks, it also becomes easier to meditate because you're not trying to solve your own problems, so you don't have to find much fault with yourself. I find anyway. Hands up if you are not a perfect person. Oh yeah? Oh, I see nobody without hands up. Okay, hands up if you allow all those other people with their hands up, you allow them to be not perfect. Nice. Well, then we should also allow ourselves to be not perfect. To our own minds to not be perfect. Everybody else allows us to be not perfect. We allow everybody else to not be perfect. So then we also don't have to be perfect. And we can be kind to ourselves and accept the way we are. And then we practice, as you might know what Ajahn Brahmava says, make peace, be kind, be gentle. that is the way to do it. Accept yourself as you are. And it's counterintuitive, but that is actually what will develop your meditation a lot. So, I leave those reflections for you. And, yeah, Chris.
Well, thank you, Venerable. I'm sure Venerable would welcome questions, if any of you have any questions or reflections. Martha, would you like to go?
Yes, please. Thank you. This is so helpful. I actually was thinking about this week. This is so good about why I'm here. Because I never was trying to reach for enlightenment. I was just trying to help myself. But then I remembered, yeah, from so long ago, this self is for the good of all. So my question is this. Taking it off the cushion, is there some way that you can help me keep in mind what that is, or do I have to? Because what happens is, say, for example, e.g., that is, when it comes to the good of all, I think I'm funnier sometimes when I've been unmuted by things like drugs and alcohol, something like that, and I think I'm funnier in that state, which I think is for the good of all, but what often happens is that it really ends up not being funnier to the other person, it's just funnier to me, or even if it is funny, I often get harmed in the process as a function of the state that I'm in.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So help for keeping in mind off the cushion, how can I dedicate this self to the good of all?
Yeah, so first of all, just by developing the meditation, you are already changing yourself as a person. I said we accept ourselves as we are, but by accepting ourselves as we are, we actually developing ourselves, being more kind. Because to accept yourself as you are is being kind to yourself. So by doing the practice, you're developing yourself. And that will naturally spread out into the rest of life. You don't really need to specifically do anything else to take the kindness out of the meditation. It's like a natural thing. It just becomes the way you are. So that is definitely my first suggestion. You can also, during the day, at times just remind yourself of being kind and generous to others. From time to time, just a little reminder, yeah? And then just based on that, you'll be just kinder to others. But you don't have to keep something constantly in your mind or something. Yeah.
That is helpful. Because that is what it's about, isn't it? Thinking I'm not good enough in a moment. That I need to change myself in some way in order to serve others. Being funny or something, whatever it is. And
yeah, just by...
After meditating that way, I do think it will be a lot more helpful.
Yeah, just by allowing yourself, you're also developing the attitude to allow others to be as they are. And then in that way, you can be a friend to others. Because nobody wants to be a friend with somebody who doesn't like the way you are. Yeah. So this is how it can be of benefit to other people. Thank you for that question, Martha. Very good question.
Venerable, Tony has a question. Tony, would you like to unmute?
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Ajahn. That was beautiful. Ajahn, I wonder if you've got any secret tips, Ajahn tip, on... how to remember, and you sort of alluded to it a moment ago, but how to remember, remind oneself to focus on being mindful throughout the day. I find that I get to the end of the day and I reflect and I think, I wasn't mindful. You know,
Yeah, don't blame yourself for not being mindful. That's the first thing. That's what I just, you know, accept. Yeah, you don't have to be mindful all day. That's all right. But there is a way to be a bit more mindful. And there's also, yeah, links up with Marta's question. Something that you can do, it's not a secret tip by any means. I don't have any secrets. But one way to help that is when your mind is clear and calm, as that would be especially after a meditation, just sort of imprint in your mind as a sort of a memory, okay, today I will be whatever your intention is. So today I will be more kind to others, today I will be more mindful. And our mind is very strange in that way. It just remembers things when it needs to. You don't need to force memories. And it's often when you can see this even in daily life activities. Sometimes there's something you just need to do and you're not remembering it all day. But when the time is, then you suddenly remember, oh, I need to do that. That thing. And this is actually what mindfulness actually also means, because the word for mindfulness means also memory in Pali, in the language of the Buddha. So it's mindfulness is not just something you do in the moment, it's also like the lingering memory that of how you want to practice. It's especially for the monks, it's thought, for example, with the restraint of the senses is called a way to practice your mindfulness, your, in a way, your memory, because you're not going around all day focusing, oh, I not should not look at the beautiful ladies or whatever, or I should not indulge in the food or whatever. It's just when it comes up, a beautiful lady walks in, then you remember, oh, I should do it. That's mindfulness. It's like a memory. And you can imprint these kind of patterns, let's say memory patterns, lacking a better word. You can like tell your mind, and your mind will actually listen. If you tell it when your mind is very clear, you can even just repeat it a couple times. You sit down after meditation, oh, today I will be more aware of not doing XYZ or whatever. I will do this. And you just tell your mind. And your mind will listen. It's very special. You can even, you might sometimes change your alarm clock for, you have to wake up earlier for some reason than usual. And I don't know if this is your experience, but in my experience, when I do that, I always wake up like a couple minutes before the alarm. It's always that way. And the reason is that your mind, even in sleep, it remembers that you have to wake up earlier. By setting your alarm clock, you sort of imprint it in your mind that you need to wake up earlier. And then it'll do that automatically. And it's the same with anything else, really. Yeah. You can even use it inside your meditation. Yeah, you can say, instead of constantly focusing on the breath, for example, with each and every breath, you're like telling yourself, I'll focus on the breath. No, don't do that. Instead, just before you do breath meditation, just tell your mind, okay, I will focus on the breath now for the next whatever, 20 minutes or whatever. And you just tell yourself a couple times, and then you just let go and let the mind do the work. And then you'll see that the mind focuses on the breath, and when it wanders, it'll remember by itself to come back. You don't need to constantly pressure the mind on the breath, as it were. And then it becomes much more an act of letting go, really. Yeah, you just let the process happen. And that is how I usually look at mindfulness in that way.
Ajahn, that's wonderful. That's very helpful, and I'll definitely be trying that.
Yeah, give it a shot.
Thank you.
Venerable, Sybil has a comment in the chat, and she would like you to talk about the, is it Vinja?
About the what?
The Vinja, V-I-N-J-A.
Vinja.
Vinaya.
Oh, the Vinaya. Yes, well, that's the monk's rules, by the way, for those who don't know. The monk's rules I would usually be teaching at this moment. And actually, before before we started the recording, there is this other monk who does the camera stuff. And I said to him, well, shall I just teach the Vinaya class to the to the Armadale group tonight then, instead? See how that would go. But then he said, well, then you, next time we have a Vinaya class, you should teach the meditation then. But I decided just to teach meditation now. Yeah, I don't know what you want to know about the Vinaya. The Vinaya are rules to, for the monks and the nuns that we keep, so we can be monks and nuns, really. It's sort of what defines monks and nuns. You don't just put on a robe and then call yourself a monk or a nun. You follow certain behaviors which make you into a monastic, a monk or a nun. Like, we don't use money, we don't have sexual intercourse, of course, we don't have partners, we cannot do many things, we don't have our own transport, we always rely on others, we cannot even have our own food, we need to rely on others for that. And a lot of more minor rules as well about lying and harming animals that we all shouldn't do. So those are the rules I teach. There is a lot of details that we then talk about in those classes. But the point of the rules is, well, multiple, but one of the reasons is that it keeping those rules also benefits our meditation as well. Especially the rules of not harming others and not lying, and also the rules on the center strain, just it uplifts the mind, and it is one of the reasons why we keep those rules. Yeah, and also to keep the tradition of the Buddha going, actually. That is one of the reasons that the Buddha himself gave for laying down the rules. He said to keep the Dhamma going, the teachings of the Buddha, he said, are kept going by the monastic rules. It's quite interesting, if you think about it, actually, that the Buddha said, we keep the rules to keep the Dhamma going. So it's actually the monks and the nuns who, according to the Buddha, keep the teachings alive. Yeah, through those rules, partly. Because it keeps us together as a community. If everybody just could go off and do their own thing, and can define themselves as a monk and a nun, regardless of rules, then it would, yeah, then there's no harmony, no community, and who is going to be any authority then on what kind of teachings to give? So and those rules they follow in all the Buddhist traditions. Slight differences between them, but yeah, on the whole, the same rules. That probably, I don't know exactly what your question was. Talk about Vinaya, I could talk for hours, but then you should become a nun. I can't remember if you were male or a female, or maybe another gender, but then you should ordain. If you want to learn more about the rules.
Well, that definitely is a challenge for Sybil to contemplate. Thank you, Venerable. Fiona has left a comment in the chat here for you. I enjoyed the meditation. I regularly repeated to myself, I am meditating today for the benefit of others. I haven't meditated from that perspective before. Thank you for sharing, Venerable.
Ah, excellent. Well, that's the reason why I teach, to learn you something new. Or sorry, to teach you something new. Just to always tell the old things that you already know is also nice. But I usually try to teach something new, and sometimes it just works for people. Sometimes it doesn't work. That's why I always say at the beginning of a meditation, well, not always, but I try to always say, I'm going to give a guided meditation, but feel free to do something different. Because in the Buddhist traditions, we have so many ways to meditate. For example, if you look in the Buddhist text on the mindfulness on the breath, this is called, some of you will know, the Anapanasati Sutta, the mindfulness on the breathing discourse that the Buddha gave. And it's actually quite telling how this discourse goes, because the Buddha does not start out by saying the monastics or the mendicants, hello, I will teach you today about mindfulness of breathing. That's not how the sutta starts, actually. It starts by saying, in this monastery, there is monastics who meditate on loving kindness. In this monastery, there is mendicants who mendicants is another word for monastics, who meditate on compassion. There's monastics who meditate on generosity. There's mendicants who meditate contemplation of the body. There's mendicants who meditate this and that. And the list is quite extensive. And then the Buddha says, and there's also the mendicants, the monastics, who meditate on the breath. And now I will teach you meditation on the breath, the Anapanasati. But notice that the Buddha never says that Anapanasati or mindfulness on the breathing is anything better than all those other kinds of meditations. It seems that he just realized that people have different dispositions, let's say, different preferences in the meditation. And also realizing that it's very beneficial to mix things up a bit. Not always do the same thing, but from time to time, try something new. And if you do that, then you sort of develop a toolbox of meditation techniques. It's like you have, when I work in the mornings here in Bodhinyana, I usually do some of the handy work. The handyman work, not the office work, that's for others, but I do more like the stuff with hammers and nails and drills and chisels, that kind of stuff. Like right now, we're building new huts for the monks. What do I do when I go work over there? Do I just take a hammer and try fix everything with a hammer? No, I take a whole toolbox with all sorts of stuff in it. Yeah, hammers. Screwdrivers, wrenches, because with more tools you'll be able to fix more problems. And it's the same with meditation. If you have more ways to meditate, it's like having more tools in your meditation toolkit. And then if you have certain, let's say, mind states that you need to work with, you can use different techniques from time to time. And this is just one technique to develop the mindset, the bodhicitta as they call it, to practice for all. That is also one of the tools to use in meditation. And a very, very helpful tool as well. Yeah, because it actually, it is not just for ourselves, it is also very beneficial to others as well. So I'm happy that I was able to teach you something new. Thank you for that comment.
Catherine, Thank you, Catherine. I just disappeared off the screen there for a moment. So, Catherine, you'd like to make a comment or ask a question?
It was mainly to make a comment, and I really appreciated tonight's meditation and the board. Thank you very much. There was this real sense of the way that you invited us into a space of connection with each other and connection with kindness that meant for me during the meditation when minor unskillful mental habits arose, I didn't really need to do anything with them. There was just an automatic kindness that arose in relation to them when I saw them. It was like, oh, you know, so it was a much easier way of being with, and just the dissolving of some of those contractions or whatever it was. I can't even remember now what they were, but it just felt a lovely, gentle, very natural response. And my sense is very much how you invited us into a very kind space and sort of just hang out there. You know, you don't need to do anything. And so from that space, it felt a lot easier and more natural to meet the challenges of having a mind.
Ah, thank you for that comment. Yeah, that is what I experience as well when I practice like that. Yeah, it just become it lifts some of the burdens, or it lifts some of the constrictions that you set for yourself. It just makes it more easy. And I had the same in the meditation. At some point, I started thinking a bit more than I usually do, and I was like, "Ah, that's fine. I'm sitting here with the Armadale group. We're all here together." That, and I said at the beginning, already achieved the aim just by coming here. And then it just becomes so easy, and you just have such a good time in meditation. And you'll find that the deeper meditations, they don't happen because you force them to happen. They happen just because the mind is right. It's almost like they happen to you. And this happens from the exact same mindset, that you just allow things to be. So by allowing things to be that you would otherwise maybe try to push out or whatever, yeah, by having that attitude, we are also will later on allowing peace and joy to be. Because it might sound very easy, oh, peace and joy, I'll have that be. But they can sometimes become very overwhelming, that you become so joyful that it is like, oh, it's a bit too much. It's like, tune it down a bit. But it's the same attitude. You just allow it to be. And that if you have listened to some of the other monks teach here, then they teach that same kind of attitude, letting things be. And that is because the Buddha taught in that way. He said the deep meditations, then when he said, what is the cause for the deep meditations? He said, was relinquishment, letting things be, letting go. That's what he said. So that's how we practice. And there's a couple ways to arrive at that kind of attitude. But I'm happy that you also have the experience that just by opening up to others and just sharing together is one way to arrive there. Yeah, so thank you, Catherine, for that comment. And I hope that resonates with others as well. And I want to thank everybody also for meditating here together also, because it's, I feel also maybe a bit more on, for some people, a bit more on the woo-woo side of things maybe. But I feel that it actually is a connection more than just the thought. I feel there is actually, when we do meditate together with this mindset, I do feel we actually, on some level, really connect with each other. And so it's also that others sort of, in a way, influence our meditation as well, I feel. So therefore, in a good way, always influence our meditation. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense, but therefore, that's why I said thank you, everybody, for meditating together, right?
It's a beautiful thing to be together on Tuesday evenings. And it's a very special, even over Zoom, it is still very, very special. Mm. Overall. Thank you for pointing that out to us. Peksha has left a comment, which you might like to comment on, and she says that today's meditation is about non-self as well.
Yes, excellent. Well, you're also a very good comments, everybody, because at the end of the meditation, I thought, should I talk about a bit non-self as well? Because it's actually the same topic in a way, just from a different angle. But then I thought, well, I won't talk about that. Let's just focus on the kindness. But yeah, you've already figured it out that it's about non-self. Non-self is not just, for those people who know this teaching, non-self is the Buddha's teachings that we don't have really anything that we can call our own ego, our own identity, let's say, because it's all part of nature we are, and we're not separate from nature, so we're all like a process. And this is exactly what you also reflect in kindness. Because the teachings on the non-self is not an intellectual idea. It should be reflected in our actions. If people understand these kind of teachings about not having an ego and about being a part of nature, then they will naturally, just because of that insight, they will naturally be more kind to others, because their sense of self, of their own ownership, is lessened by lessening your own, like say, ego, or however you want to call it. You open up to others. And this is one way that you can tell, the best way actually, that you can tell, I think, who are more advanced practitioners, let's say, if you want to use that kind of term, advanced practitioners, yeah, who have developed more. It's not by the things they say about the wise, deep Dhamma discussions or whatever, or the intellectual ideas. No, it's about how they are as a human being, and then especially how are they in relation to others, and how do they respond when others don't act kindly to them. Do they get angry, or do they usually just sort of brush it off and have a kind heart instead? So all these teachings of the Buddha are all connected with one another. And exactly, the teaching on not self is also a teaching on kindness in a way. And often I reflect on it in that way. You can tell how much of a sense of self you still have by how angry you get really with other people. Because when you're angry or annoyed, it just creates separation between you and them on the mental level. Yeah, you just don't like that person, and you, by sort of reflecting on that other person, is sort of like you're also create this sense of self. It's like me, I am right, and they are wrong, right? This kind of an attitude. But you can really realize when your mind is peaceful and has some of these insights that those kind of me and versus mine attitude is much lessened. So I often use that also as a sort of a gauge, like a meter, some indicator, let's call it an indicator, for my practice. How is my practice going? I don't just look at my meditation itself, but also at how I am with the rest of the monks community and with other people. And actually that gives me a lot of a better indication sometimes. There was this this monk in England, when I was staying in England, Ajahn Munindo, and he gave a teaching, and then he said, if I remember correctly, he gave this teaching, anyway, it doesn't matter who gave it, but the teaching was, well, when we want to see who the really wise monks are, we don't check them out during the meditation, but we check them out on the busy days, when all the people come and all the work needs to be done. If they are then still peaceful, then they are the wise monks. And that's a very good teaching. Yeah. So sometimes in the monastery it's usually very quiet, but every now and then we have, like Chris, you mentioned the Vesak day, for example, in the introduction. Well, that could be a day that it'd be much more busy. Or when we have the entry of the range retreat. And there's a lot of things to be done. And if at that moment you can really, really tell apart the peaceful monks from the less peaceful monks, at least at that day, because some will just go with the flow, yeah, it's all right. And others, yeah, they get a bit more annoyed with all the work that needs to be done and stuff. So don't just judge by your meditation, but judge by the way you live your life. That's how you can really tell you've understood non-self or not. Yeah. Hope that makes any sense. Well, since you brought it up yourself, it should make some sense, huh?
Yes, I think that does make sense.
Yeah.
Venerable. Is there anybody else who would like to make a comment or ask a question? Oh, yes, comment?
I wanted to say thank you, and your talk, and especially also your meditation, was very inspiring. It had a very similar effect on me, like loving kindness. It opened the space, and it was really pleasant to sit in the space with all of you. It was really, really nice. I really enjoyed it. And also, it's nice to have you back, and hopefully you will come occasionally from time to time to give us teachings. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Uli. Yeah, maybe we should do that. Just skip the Vinaya class from time to time, something like that. Who knows? It's very nice to be here, so it's no problem. Yeah.
Is there anyone else who would like to make a comment or ask a question?
This is your chance. I may not ever come back again.
might have to wait again for some.
Yeah, another 11 months. Seems like everybody's nice and peaceful then. That's good.
Yes, I think everybody is very peaceful this evening. Would you like me to come up with a question, Venerable, or how do you feel?
Whatever you want, it's all good. If you have a question, then you can ask it, but if you have to force yourself to ask a question, then just leave it be, I would say.
I would like you to actually talk a little bit about Vesak Day, if you wouldn't mind, because it is coming up very soon, and everyone here, of course, is welcome to take the five precepts, but I'm not sure that everybody fully understands maybe about the five precepts and Vesak Day. Would you like to give it an introduction, Venerable?
No problemos. Yeah, Vesak Day is a traditional Buddhist like a holiday, a sort of a festival day in a way, but it is not just party time. It's actually in a way I don't want to call it serious, but it is very special, auspicious is what they would call it. Because on Vesak Day, we celebrate the Buddha, the existence of the Buddha. And tradition says, I think this is just tradition, that the Buddha was born on the same day in the year as that he got enlightened on the same day of the year, and then he also died on the same day of the year. Yeah, well, could well be true, but it seems that's probably tradition, but that doesn't matter, because now we just use that day of the year to reflect on the Buddha and to reflect on the Buddha. The Buddha's enlightenment especially means not to reflect on a person per se, but to reflect on his qualities, on his bodhicitta, to come back to that again, on his Buddha's mind. Yeah. So we reflect on the existence of our teacher, but also the day gives us an opportunity to emulate him, to bring those teachings into our hearts and to practice them. It's like an extra reminder of that. And for that reason, Vesak Day has also been a traditional day for people to take certain precepts, which is like certain practices for their lives, to develop themselves more, to become like a Buddha. And those precepts are five, and they are five precepts for the non-monastic people like you. For the lay people, they have the five precepts, and the five precepts are not to kill any living beings, not to lie, not to steal, not to have sexual misconduct, and also to refrain from intoxicants like alcohol and drugs. And those five precepts, although I have phrased them now in the not, are practices. Yeah? We do our very best to practice those things. And it's not commandments like you would have in some other religions. Yeah? They are phrased in, I undertake the practice to refrain from lying, for example. That's how they are phrased when you would take these precepts. So, and also, just to make that point that they are not commandments that if you break them, it's all bad. No, they are practices more than anything else. Try to develop ourselves in that direction. And also by extent, it also means, for example, the precept on not killing living beings by extent also means to be kind to all living beings. So all these precepts are also connected to the meditation we do. They are not separate. And this is one reason why people like to take these precepts. It's also to help them in their meditation as well. And you can just take those precepts by yourself. Just, I did that when I was a lay person. At one time I decided, okay, I'm going to follow the five precepts. And that is good enough. You don't need to take them with a monastic who recites them, and then you recite them afterwards. But some people like to do that, either when they take them for the first time or to reconfirm it. And usually on the Vesak Day, the BSWA has a special ceremony with Ajahn Brahm for new people who take the precepts for the first time, especially from people from abroad, because they cannot come over here. Then they can take those precepts with Ajahn Brahm. And it's always a very nice ceremony. And you take the precepts, and also you take refuge, is what we call it. You sort of take, you take shelter in, or you rely on the Buddha and his teachings and the Sangha of the people who also have similar insights as the Buddha. You sort of, in a way, by taking those precepts and refuges, is like you, we sometimes say that is when you sort of become a Buddhist. If there is any ceremony that would determine you being a Buddhist or not, then that would be it. Yeah. Although you can still call yourself a Buddhist without going through that official ceremony. I never, as a layperson, never did that. I did actually, but I already kept the rules for those precepts for a long time before I ever took them officially as a layperson. But yeah, there is this official sort of kind of ceremony that you can do if you want to. And that is done on Vaisak Day.
And if you do wish to, there's an email address in the chat for Lucky. If you would like to contact him, you can get full details on taking the precepts.
Maybe I should just, maybe just for everybody who is listening to this later, they may not be able to read the chat. So the email address is Lucky, Lucky, at bswa.org, is it?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, very good.
Oh, Venerable, really an auspicious turn of fate brought you to our door tonight. And thank you, Venerable, for your kind teachings about how special we all are. We are looking forward to your next visit. Would you be happy to offer us a blessings chant to finish the evening?
I will. And since I just spoke about the refuges in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and I will chant something that's connected to that. And that means, what I will chant means, there is no other refuge for me like the Buddha / Dhamma / Sangha. This is the best refuge for me, and by this may I share to you so that you may be free from problems. That's a very liberal translation, but that's basically what it means. Yeah, it's nothing really auspicious, it's just wishing you all happiness. Yeah. Natthi me saranang anyang, buddho me saranang varang, etena sacca vajjena sotite hotu sabbada. Natthi me saranang anyang, dhammo me saranang varang, etena sacca vajjena sotite hotu sabbada. Natthi me saranang anyang, sangho me saranang varang, etena sacca vajjena sotite hotu sabbada. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yes, I see, yes. Excellent.